Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Flexian Podcast here on Hard Hits. I'm your host, Derek Felix, and it is a half hour here that we've got here for you on the Hard Hits Network. I'm your host, Derek Flex Felix, and it's good to be back here on the airwaves of Block Talk Radio. Got a lot to obviously discuss here in the month of May, as we are on May 2nd here. Believe it or not, we're in the month of May after what was a very long, long winter. And we've been in spring for about 10 days or so. And we've had some pretty interesting weather. Ranging from very hot with temperatures going over 80 degrees here in New York, in Staten Island area, to temperatures even in the low 50s. And with winds, that made it feel like it was like under 40 the other day. I mean, you had wind chills that where I think it was like 60 degrees, and I felt like it was about 40. And that was maybe 48 hours ago. And I mean, the wind was just blowing all over the place. And the next day, you got 82 degrees and sunny. So, but again, that kind of stuff is pretty normal for this type of year, especially on the East Coast, or on the East Coast, I should say. It's been a while since I actually did a podcast, but did want to delve in. And with, there's a lot of stuff, obviously, that's going on right now. Just pick a sport. I mean, you've got so much stuff happening. You got baseball. A month in full swing, the Yankees sweeping the Tigers, who they aren't really a Major League Baseball team. Corey Kluber striking out 10, take care of the Tigers and sweep them, and they get back to 500. You got the Mets. They're also at 500 after winning the next two games from the Phillies after that crazy scene on Friday night with Jose Alvarado trash-talking Dominic Smith after he struck him out. I don't know. There's just a lot of weird stuff going on. The Mets were able to hang on when Diaz nearly blowing an 8-4 lead with Rhys Hoskins coming this close to a game-tying three-run home run. They originally called it a home run, and then they called it back. And I'll tell you, that's where sometimes your ballpark works against you, and the Phillies ballpark in that case went against them. The ball actually hit the railing. The ball was in play. And who knows? And Bryce Harper struck out against Jeurys Familia, who had to come in for Diaz. And who knows? But you got baseball going on. You got Mike Trout doing what Mike Trout things and what Mike Trout does. You got Shohei Ohtani, obviously also on the Angels. He's pitching pretty well. He's hitting. The Angel lineup's pretty good. That's a pretty interesting story right there. I don't know if they're better than they're going to be better than the other teams in that division. That's the whole thing. You'd like to see the Angels in the playoffs with Mike Trout and Ohtani and Anthony Rendon, former World Series winner and MVP, postseason MVP. You'd like to see them in the playoffs. I just don't know if they've got enough there. So there's a lot of baseball going on, a lot of baseball stuff happening. Byron Buxton scorching the ball, but the Minnesota Twins are a terrible team right now. You got the White Sox. They can certainly hit the baseball. Even without Eloy Jimenez, they're hitting the baseball. And they're actually behind the Kansas City Royals. The Royals have been a big surprise so far. They've been winning lots of games lately. I think they're up to 16-10. They lost yesterday. But they've been playing really well. And how about my dad's Giants? they've been playing great so far. They lost the first two games to the Padres, and the Padres are going to be really good. And but they did win the third game. Mike Tauchman, a familiar face, Mike Tauchman, ex-Yankee, just traded to the Giants because they didn't really have a spot for him. For a guy I like to call Wandy Rodriguez, I'm calling him Wanda because I don't think he's all that good. But he hits a three-run home run. The Giants take the final. He travels the final game, and they're in first place. They actually have a better record than the Dodgers and the Padres. They're 17-11, and the Dodgers just lost what they lose, 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 to the Brewers. Brewers walked off of them a couple of times. The Dodgers did come back with some big-time hitting on Sunday earlier today, and they were able to salvage the final game. They're 17-12, and they've been losing a lot of games lately, and the Padres are in third. I mean, you can pretty much expect the Dodgers and Padres to be the top two teams there. I have both those teams in the playoffs. I did not expect the Giants to be off to this kind of start, but so far, I mean, they've done a good job. They're getting good pitching. Kevin Gausman's been pitching pretty well for them. Cueto's pitched well. They're getting some hitting as well, timely hitting, and that's without a couple of guys in there. Buster Posey's look pretty fresh, but we could get all into the baseball later. You've got the Knicks and the Nets. The Nets, obviously, all the pressure is on them to make the NBA Finals. Even with all this chaos with, you know, them resting guys, Kevin Durant with hamstring management and all this other garbage, and you never know when Kyrie Irving's going to decide that he needs a mental health day. Look, mental health is a very serious thing, but these guys get paid a lot of money, so I don't really understand. And James Harden comes over to the Nets, and this is a guy who plays pretty much through anything, but he gets hurt, and he's got an issue, and he hasn't played for a while, and they don't know when he's going to be back. So I would imagine he'll be ready by the playoffs, but there will be a lot of pressure on the Nets. But the Knicks are really a great story. They did win over the Houston Rockets fairly easily. The Rockets are a very bad team ever since James Harden left there. They do have a point guard that they stole from the Cleveland Cavs, though, that looks to be a really good player. So who went for, I think, 50 points. Keep an eye on him and keep an eye on Christian Wood. But Julius Randle has been a big story, and we're going to get more into Julius Randle and his involvement into a superstar. Well, I don't want to say superstar like he's a Kevin Durant or RN or something like that or anything. I'm not trying to lock into that. But what I'm trying to say right now is Julius Randle has had a tremendous season for the New York Knicks. A lot of big games, averaging about 25.5 points, pulling down double-digit rebounds. More of a point forward. He's able to distribute assists, able to knock down threes. He has worked really hard, and the New York Knicks are the biggest surprise of the NBA, so we will talk about that. And the NFL draft was this past weekend. There were a lot of quarterbacks gone very quick right there. You saw it, obviously, with Lawrence going number one to the Jags. Everybody expected that to happen. And then the Jets decided to go with Zach Wilson. That was supposed to happen. It was expected. And the 49ers, they went with Trey Lyles. So they like him. They want him to be their quarterback of the future. And they still haven't decided what the Jimmy Garoppolo situation is going to be. So there's that situation. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about with the NFL draft. The Giants looked like they really wanted Devontae Smith, the Heisman winner, with the 11th pick. But guess what? The rivals, the Eagles, decide to trade down, and then they trade back into the 10th slot with the Cowboys, who didn't want Smith. They wanted a defensive guy. And so what do? They trade with the Eagles. And so their biggest rivals do win the Giants, and they don't get Devontae Smith. And they wind up instead with Kadarius Toney, a guy who looks like an afterburner, a guy that's not that big, but a guy that will definitely spread the field. One of those speedsters that can really spread the field. The kid Kadarius Toney, the Giants trade down to number 20 because the Bears decided they wanted Fields. to be their next quarterback of the future. And I'm sure he'll be behind Andy Dalton, who they signed to a year. And I never think it's a bad thing to have a veteran quarterback in there just to help guide, you know, a quarterback that you just drafted that may not be ready to take over the helm yet. So I think that was a good move by the Bears. I think they gave up a lot. I thought the Giants did very well there. They get a first-round pick from theirs next year's draft. I mean, and I don't think the Bears are going to be making the playoffs this year, so that could be a real good pick for the Giants. Plus, they got some later-round picks as well. So I think David Gettleman did pretty well in terms of moving down a couple of times, something that you don't see too often from David Gettleman. And he's been criticized before, but very interesting, to say the least. But I got to start with the hockey. Obviously, there were really, at the time, they were significant games. You had the Rangers taking on the New York Islanders, winners of three straight, because they beat up on the Cupcakes. They beat up on the teams that were below them. And I'm talking, of course, they beat up on the Devils. They beat up on the Sabres. Even though the Sabres have been competitive, they, after that very bad loss to the Islanders, where they lost 6-1 at the Garden the previous Tuesday, they had a bad loss to the Flyers, losing by a goal, and the Rangers, they are not good at one-goal games, and that's the reason why they're not going to be going to the playoffs. That's one of the reasons why they're not making the playoffs. Here's another couple of reasons. I'm going to get to it. The Islanders own the Rangers. That I don't like saying that. I don't like the Islanders, but they do. The Islanders are the Rangers' daddies, and we saw it. We saw it on Thursday. I mean, Adam Fox, special year for Adam Fox, second-year player becoming a star defenseman, a guy that should be up for Norris, could even win it possibly. Although I probably would say chances are maybe less than 50% because he is a second-year defenseman, and they're not going to be in the playoffs. And, yeah, he is going to lead all defensemen in scoring probably if he finishes strong. He has the lead right now with the 47 points and the 42 assists. And he's got the great numbers. But will they actually vote for him? That's the question. They don't usually do that when it comes to young players. You got Victor Hedman, obviously. I still say he's the cream of the crop. He is the best defenseman in the game. But Adam Fox has made a name for himself. Adam Fox looks like one of the best defensemen in the game. And Shea Theodore of the Vegas Golden Knights, those would be my three candidates. Those are my three guys that I think deserve to be nominated. And I like the way they used to do the awards, where they don't tell you who's nominated. I don't like how they do the nominations. I don't like having a big award ceremony. I'm not big on that, but just to make it short here, Rangers had a real chance to really make a statement. You know, they had lost 6-1 to the Islanders, and that was bad enough. But the way they lost the game on Thursday night, a game that had they won it, they could have pulled for within 3 points of the New York Islanders, who hadn't been scoring goals, who had been struggling, who had been having a lot of issues, especially against the Washington Capitals, shut out a couple of times, lost in extras to them as well. I mean, they had these two games where you win the games, meaning no 3-point game, you win it in regulation. They would have been 1 point behind the New York Islanders, and there would have been all sorts of pressure on Barry Trotz's club, a club that went to the conference finals and pushed the Tampa Bay Lightning, who won the Stanley Cup, as hard as they could. I mean, really. Last I checked. But when it comes down to it, the Rangers just don't have enough grind. They don't have enough grit. And it's just, it's disappointing. It was very disappointing. Fox gets presented that prestigious award for Stephen McDonald. Stephen McDonald, of course, a former NYPD detective, injured in the line of duty, shot by a teenager and he was paralyzed from the take the neck down, had to be in a wheelchair. And the Rangers have had this award, I think, since 1987, I believe. It's called the Extra Effort Award, and they always have a check that they make. I think it's like $25,000 or $50,000 to the Stephen McDonald Foundation. Stephen McDonald, in a wheelchair, with the support of his wife, Patty, with his kids, including Connor McDonald, who was also a New York Police Department officer as well. It goes to the Ranger who goes above and beyond the call of duty. And this award used to go to the real gritty guys, the hard-working guys, you know, the guys like the Jed Ortmeyers, like the Adam Graves. Well, Adam Graves did score 50-plus goals, 51 goals. He had the record with the 52 goals where he broke Vic Hatfield's record. But it also used to go to guys that were, you know, kind of just grinding players. You could have made a case for Brian Lindgren, who just the warrior, and now he's probably not going to return because he probably has a concussion after that hit. He went for a hit against Cal Clutterbuck. Clutterbuck kind of countered, and he hit that plexiglass by the side near the bench just very hard. That did not look so good. Maybe it was a concussion. Maybe it was an upper body injury, as they call it. Like, who knows what it was? But I mean, I knew you weren't going to see him in the rematch on Saturday night. I think the real disappointing thing, you know, it wasn't so much that they lost 3-0 in what was probably the final game at Nassau Coliseum between these rivals that had this rivalry going for almost 50 years now. Really. I mean, it's a great rivalry. It's the best rivalry. It's not even close. Because these teams, they face each other every year. Knicks, Nets, no. Knicks, Nets doesn't compare. It doesn't. Why? Because the Nets now have Durant, have Irving, and Harden, and they're in Brooklyn. They've been in Brooklyn for almost a decade. Doesn't compare. The Giants, Jets, you want to compare Giants, Jets. They don't even play in the same division. Mets, Yankees. I don't consider that a rivalry. Maybe Mets fans do. Maybe some Yankee fans do. It's not a rivalry. The Mets beat, as far as I'm concerned, the Mets beat one of their biggest rivals tonight. Beating the Phillies, taking 2 out of 3. Along with the Braves. Those are their biggest rivals. The Yankees, their biggest rivals, of course, are the Red Sox. And the Red Sox actually are off to a good start. And now the Rays are a big rival. Maybe the Blue Jays, if the Blue Jays hitting the ball, if Guerrero hitting the ball a ton so far. We'll see how if that continues. But Rangers Islanders, I mean, there have been some wars. You go back and you look at some of those old series, those classic series, the year the Rangers upset the Islanders in 1979 behind John Davidson with Esposito and all those characters. You look at the 80s, and it was those Rangers teams that gave the Islanders some of their hardest series. They took them to overtime in 1984, Game 5. Kenny Morrow beat them with a slap shot in overtime. After the Rangers tied it on a Maloney, well, probably was a high stick, but they said it was okay. And they lose in overtime with Kenny Morrow, and the Islanders made their fifth straight Stanley Cup final, and they finally lost to the Edmonton Oilers and Wayne Gretzky, and then the Oilers dynasty, and they beat them in 4 straight. And but the Rangers and Islanders, the last time they faced each other in the playoffs was in 1994. That was a great year for me. It was my senior year of high school. It's down on Tech, and what a memorable run that was. between sweeping the Islanders, beating the Caps in five, who they always had problems with. The Devil series, the memorable Eastern Conference final that went seven games. Messier guaranteed, wasn't really guaranteed, he just believed they were going to win. And who knew he was going to come up with a natural hat trick in the third period, Kovalev scoring and then Messier doing the rest. And then that crazy game seven, with Leafs scoring that spinorama, Devils tying it on Zella Pupkin's goal with Claude Lemieux, the hated Claude Lemieux setting him up with like 7.7 seconds left. And then Stefan Matteau, double overtime, and then they beat the Canucks. They held off the Canucks in seven games. It's been a long time since the Rangers won that cup. You know, they celebrated. They honored the 25th year anniversary. I was there for that. That was nice. But come on already. It's been a long time. We're talking on 27 years now. Really 26 seasons because we missed the season, but it's 27 years. They reached the Stanley Cup final in 2014, and Alain Vigneault really did a real good job with that team to come back against the Penguins. They rallied around Marty St. Louis after his mom, France, passed away. Lundqvist, all those classic Rangers from that black and blue shirts era. Ryan Callahan traded for Marty St. Louis. Too many draft picks given up by Glenn Sather. But they got there. They got there. I mean, they beat the Preds finally. They beat the Canadiens. With a little help from Chris Kreider with Carey Price. With the whole accidentally on purpose thing. But the only guy that's left is Chris Kreider from those teams. And Chris Kreider missed the last two games, and the Rangers did not score a goal. They got embarrassed. They got embarrassed at MSG on Thursday night. That wasn't even a game. It was a disgrace. It was just awful. It was awful hockey. It didn't matter which goalie played, Igor Shesterkin or Gorgiev, as it played out on Saturday when Tarmo Rudinen came in. I thought he was all right, though. He gave up 17 minutes. It wasn't off for any of the goals. Morgan Barron made his debut. He was okay. He didn't do anything bad. He was on the fourth line. The fourth line was the one line that was effective. The game at the Garden was worse. They looked like they quit. Panarin disappeared. Zibanejad, again, did nothing against the Islanders. He only scored one goal in the eight-game series, an empty net goal with two assists. That just doesn't get it done. Ryan Strom's had a really good year. He's been in a little bit of a slump, hasn't scored in a while. Panarin, as I said, ton goal in the last three games against the Islanders. The Islanders have a way of shutting you down. And you know what the Islanders are? You know why they're able to do that? Because of Barry Trotz and because of his system. Now, I'm not going to start singing all the praises of Barry Trotz. He's just a really good coach who won a Stanley Cup with the Caps and got Ovechkin over the hump with Braden Holtby and Carlson and Backstrom and all those guys. But he's just a good coach. He has a really good system. It's very structured. The Islanders are very defensive-oriented. It is not fun to watch. But what do? Your discipline. They take away the middle of the ice. That's what Bika said. They make it tough on you. And Rangers didn't have any answers. You take out, you subtract the guys, do the little things that help you win. I'm talking about Jacob Trouba, who got concussed probably by Matt Martin, yeah, on that hit in that game where things just fell apart. After Jacob Trouba was hit by Matt Martin, then the Islanders outscored the Rangers 6-1. And the Islanders went on to outscore the Rangers, I think it was 12-1 or 13-1. I can't even keep track. Then Ryan Lindgren, Troop without the nuts and bolts, Ryan Lindgren, very similar, goes down. You take those two guys out. defense is just too soft. Not no disrespect. Fox just he can't do it by himself. Zach Jones pair with Kendrick Miller. And Kendrick Miller has been brutal lately. He's been brutal. He's had maybe one good game over the past month. Really needs to work on his angles. Really needs to work on using his size more and not relying so much on his reach. He needs to get edgier. His play has definitely deteriorated. Brandon Smith's the one guy that plays that honest, plays their honest game. And I'll tell you, he would have been a good candidate for the extra effort award. And the guy plays his balls off. I wouldn't mind having Brandon Smith back. I guess what it really comes down to is, and then Kreider, everybody calls crazy about Kreider and his slumps and the fact he had no even strength goals over the past month and a half, whatever it is. How's the power play look without Chris Kreider? How's the offense look without Kreider taking the front of the net away? Getting in front of Varlamov or getting in front of the opposing goalies. Who else does it for the Rangers? Colin Blackwell? Brett Howden? And Brett Howden sacrificed himself. Well, people go nuts about Brett Howden and what he's not because of the trade with McDonough and JT Miller and Tampa Bay. I understand it. But I'll tell you what Brett Howden does. He forechecks. He wins faceoff. Another thing the Rangers can't do with their center iceman. God forbid they get a faceoff coach in here. He blocks shots, like the block shot that he had against the Islanders. And he fractured his foot and is off for the rest of the year. And Morgan Barron finally gets to play. And he just plays that north-south game. He's just an honest guy. Now, nobody really knows what his future is. But you know what? If he decided to keep Brett Howden around, I wouldn't be against that. Because he's a really good penalty killer. He can win faceoffs. He plays hard nosed. He gets dirty. I wish more Rangers played like him. I can't believe I'm saying that. What's he got? Two goals? Is that what he had? Two goals? But I feel like the Rangers don't have enough of that. He'll go play well. The guy who was out of the lineup, who came down man out in the game last night. Julien Gauthier missed 14 games in a row. After Kravtsov arrived, and because they'd rather have Howden, because they think Howden's just a better overall player, and he probably is. But Gauthier, he created one of the few offensive chances off just a really hard forecheck where he was physical behind the net and created a shot on goal, drew a penalty. He was good on the fourth line with Blarin and Kevin Rooney. Kevin Rooney was a good addition. I don't know if he's going to be around next year, but I wouldn't. Honestly, he's going to be sacrificed because of the expansion draft of the Seattle coming in. Or is that? I kind of want it to be Julien Gauthier that goes to Seattle because the guy deserves a chance. He deserves a chance to play. But that lack of grind, that lack of grit, the over-reliance on the East-West, on all these passes across the ice, that doesn't work against the Islanders or against playoff teams. And if you are listening, this is Derek Felix here, the one and only Flex, the Flexian podcast here on Hard Hits Network. And I'm talking a little bit about the Rangers' issues. Shut out again by Semyon Varlamov. Semyon Varlamov shut the New York Rangers out in back-to-back games, becoming the first goalie since Terry Sawchuk to do that. Pitched back-to-back shutouts against the Rangers. That goes back, I think, all the way to 1954, I believe. That is insane. Absurd also. So this podcast's going to run a little over. Semyon Varlamov had four shutouts against the Rangers this year. That's ridiculous. That's absurd. He leads the NHL with seven shutouts, and four came against the Rangers. look, Varlamov is a good goalie. Obviously, it helps to play in the system, in that system that Trotz has. But when Henrik Lundqvist won his Vezina trophy, he won it in a very similar system under John Tortorella. A Tortorella that's leaving Columbus, and I don't know what his future holds, whether he decides he wants to coach again. Maybe the Buffalo Sabres job becomes available. Maybe not. If they like the job that Don Granato has done. I actually think Tort would be a good fit for the Sabres. Or maybe Tortorella decides he wants to coach a team that maybe has a chance to do something in the playoffs. Or maybe Tortorella is not going to coach again. I think Tortorella did as much as he could do in Columbus with the limited resources he had. Because when push comes to shove, nobody wants to play in Columbus, Ohio. And that's too bad. I feel bad for the fans. I think they have a really good fan base. Those fans are very diehard. They're very passionate. They are very loud. Some of those series that they played against the Penguins in the past, always very entertaining. Great fans. Panarin left. Bobrovsky couldn't wait to get to Florida and have Florida overpay him, even though the Panthers are going to be they are a good team and under Quenneville in their second year. That goalie situation is worth watching with Spencer Knight getting some games play and Chris Drieger. They have three goalies to choose from, and Barkov's had a tremendous year. Huberto, that's a good team right there, and that's without Aaron Ekblad, who had that terrible injury. That's a real tough division to call. With the Carolina Hurricanes leading it, then you got the Lightning, you got the Panthers. I mean, that division, look, only one team come out of that division in the first two rounds. I kind of like the Carolina Hurricanes. The one question is, now, which goalie will Rod Brind'Amour go with? Is it going to be Peter Mrazek, the kid that they have there, who they held on to, Nedeljkovic, or James Reimer? But I like their lineup. I like their roster. I like the way they play. What about the Lightning? You can't count the defending champs out. I mean, you have to think that Stamkos and Kucherov, or at least one of them, should be ready in that first round. Now, do you want to play in a 2-3 matchup against the Panthers? I wouldn't. I'm trying to avoid that if I'm one of those teams. But, you know, the fourth seed, I mean, it's looking like it's going to be the Nashville Predators. They've played much better hockey. I got to give John Hines some credit. They've played really good hockey down the stretch. They're trying to hold off the Stars. The Dallas Stars still, I think, have some games at hand. There's still enough time. They are 3 points behind. There is still enough time, but they don't have the regulation wins tiebreak. And they just suffered an overtime loss to the Predators, 1-0. If it's the Stars near the one seed, yeah, that would be a hard matchup. And Predators are good. I don't think they're good enough. I don't think they are good enough to beat whether it's Carolina or it's Tampa or Florida in the first round. I don't think they would beat those. But if you have to draw the Stars, I mean, you look at that West, Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota, 6 points separates. Vegas probably going to win that. They're going to win probably that division. But Colorado, by the way, has the regulation wins edge. And Wild are right behind. You want to play the St. Louis Blues because the Blues right now, they're starting to look like the team that won the Stanley Cup a couple years ago. Ryan O'Reilly's playing great again. David Perron is producing. They're rounding into form. I mean, the only question is Jordan Binnington. They could be a tough out. We pretty much know what the East picture is going to look like. I don't like saying East. I mean, those are the names of the conference. It really is the Patrick division with the additions of the Bruins and Sabres. We know it's the Pens. We know it's the Caps. We know that the Islanders and the Bruins, by tomorrow night, will have wrapped up that final spot. And the Bruins can jump over the Islanders. So, but the Islanders have, you have to take care of the Rangers. They do have a schedule which includes games against the Devils. By the way, the Devils have won 3 in a row. They beat the Flyers 3 times in a row, which tells you how bad the Flyers are. They're just in the tank. I wonder if Elaine Vigneault is going to get the heave-ho, if he's going to not have a job. I mean, wow. I mean, they've really fallen apart. They were pretty – look what Mika Zibanejad did to the Flyers. And then look what Mika Zibanejad against even the Sabres. So look at him against other teams. Yeah, I mean, the Flyers just – they don't play any defense. The Rangers have 58 points. A lot of people say, well, what if Panarin didn't have to miss the 2 weeks or whatever it was, week and a half, nine games, whatever he missed, you know, for that crazy thing, that crazy rumor back home? Well, that's life. I mean, every team is dealing with off-ice stuff, with injuries, what have you. And I thought, you know, the Rangers actually played well. You want to talk about the Tony DeAngelo thing? That was early in the season. I mean, come on. I mean, it's just – and the Rangers look foolish for what they did with DeAngelo, just banishing him. $4.8 million of waste, and now they're going to buy him out. You know, they could have used some of that emotion against the Islanders. And Tony D didn't do himself any favors. He's got some behavioral issues. But tell you one thing, he wouldn't have gone down the way the Rangers went down. They went down for winter in those games. Yes, they were more competitive in the second game, but yeah, before you even sit down on the couch and you're ready to relax, you can't even relax. The Islanders already have scored the first goal. And Anthony Beauvillier, I mean, Anthony Beauvillier is a nice player, good, hardworking player for the Islanders. They got 12 career goals against the Rangers in 20-something games, 23 games, or whatever it is. Barzal doesn't even have to do anything. He gets an empty net goal to make it 4-0 in the game in MSG. That was just brutal. And then Barzal, although he did score on a breakaway, he beat Gorgiev on a breakaway after the Rangers' power play just looked awful. But there are positives with the team. I'm talking about Lafreniere, who he does not look intimidated. He's willing to get dirty. He created the Rangers' best chance. He created two of the Rangers' best chances in those games, in those lopsided games, 4-0 or 3-0. The setup to Mika Zibanejad for the one-timer, and Zibanejad was denied. And the setup for Buchnevich. And Buchnevich was stoned by Varlamov, who turned into Dominik Hasek, and Brodeur rolled into him, and Patrick Roth. It's really, or maybe he turned I can't think of a great Russian goalie right now. I just can't do it. But I look at Lafreniere. I look at Kravtsov. I know Kravtsov's only got a goal and two assists, but I watch Kravtsov, though, the way he skates. He doesn't make many mistakes. He's willing to get in there on the forecheck. He looks good on pretty much any line, but he's not good enough to play on the power play. A very creative player, seems to have good hockey sense. You give him, you know, an off season, beef up a little, get a little bit stronger, top nine. I think you're looking at a real good player. Kaapo Kakko, I think his overall game has been sound. He's improved leaps and bounds with his overall game. A lot of takeaways. You notice him a lot more on the forecheck. Always really good. He's really good along the wall. You know, what it really comes down to with Kaapo? Production. 8 goals and 8 assists in the second year. That's just not going to cut it. And I think he works really hard. And I like what I've seen in terms of his improvement. But he needs to get more shots on goal. There are too many games where he's getting 1 and 2 shots or even none. And he needs to produce. So year 3 is going to be very important for Kaapo Kakko to see what kind of player can he be. And look, Jack Hughes is going through the same kind of thing, except Jack Hughes, he shoots the puck more, and he gets a lot of scoring chances. And he's a better player, right? He's a I don't want to say much better. I don't want to lock it today. He's just a better offensive player right now than Capo. But Capo is real good in terms of possession, in terms of being pretty solid. What I didn't like was the weak stick check, just a lackadaisical stick check, which allowed the Islanders to score the first goal to Leo Komarov. And, of course, he got his first goal of all people, and that set the tone for the two-game series. And Kendri Miller nowhere to be found. Kendri Miller nowhere to be found on the Barzal breakaway after the east-west pass. Look, I don't want to be too hard on Kendri Miller. He is a first-year defenseman. But he needs to be a top-four defenseman, and I think he is. And he just needs to get stronger. He needs to make better decisions. He needs to do a better job taking his angles. And maybe he could become that two-way defenseman that they think he can. I'd like to see him use his body a little more. I know he has hits, and he's blocked a lot of shots, and he's got a great reach. But he could be better. He needs to just get consistent, more consistent. If he could work on those things, skating a little bit too, I think, on the defensive side. Those are areas he could work on. Zach Jones, I mean, he wasn't going to turn pro. Molly Walker had that great interview with him. Then he changed his mind when they won the championship at UMass. First ever championship, national championship. There was sophomore year, a real good sophomore year. He got some comparisons to Fox. I don't think that's fair. I don't really like comps. I don't like doing comparisons. And Fox is a tremendous hockey player already. And the Rangers got very lucky there. He didn't want to play for the Calgary Flames. Didn't want to play in Carolina. Rangers coughed up 2 second-round picks. And Adam Fox is just tremendous. I mean, the skating, how he can skate into space and find space. He knows where to go. And his positioning, his defense, too, his recoveries. Yeah, there are some Leach-like qualities. And I don't like saying that because Brian Leach was in his own category. I just don't like doing comparisons. I just want to say Adam Fox is Adam Fox. And Adam Fox is a tremendous player to watch. And I felt watching him in his first year as he got better, you know, maybe this guy is a better overall defenseman than Cale Makar. And some people are talking about Makar for Norris. Why? Because he's point per game. You think Makar is as good as Fox overall? I don't. I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. I don't care how many points Makar puts up. And he gets exposed sometimes defensively along with the Avalanche where they rely too much on their power play. He's a point machine. So is Quinn Hughes. He's not in my top three. No way. I'm not putting him over Fox. I'm not putting him over Hedman. And I'm not putting him over Shea Theodore. I'm not putting him over those three guys. Get out of here. Maybe next time when he plays a full year, he missed time. Not fair to those other guys. All right, so the Rangers have some tough decisions to make. You know, they have to decide, is Mika Zibanejad just a guy who just takes advantage of bad opponents? Or is he a guy that can take on the responsibility of being that top center? I mean, we know he's a really good penalty killer. We see the work that he puts in. We've seen the improvement of Pavel Buchnevich, another guy that disappeared against the Islanders. At least he got a couple of scoring chances. Zibanejad did have 7 shots in the rematch. But it's just embarrassing to get outscored 13-1 in 3 games by your bitter rival, your blood rival. That's unacceptable. I understand the Islanders are a better team right now. They're more experienced. They destroyed them on faceoffs. Maybe not yesterday. There weren't a lot of faceoffs, but in the game prior, I mean, they just got destroyed. They got destroyed by Pajot. Pajot, God, I still can't stand him for what happened in 2017. We got destroyed by Pajot and Brock Nelson. Right? Brock Nelson. He really epitomizes what the Islanders are. Everybody talks about Matt Barzal, but you know, when a push comes to shove, I think Brock Nelson's really the emotional leader of that team. He doesn't take the bad penalties that Barzal takes with the stick infractions, with the boarding that he had on Brendan Smith, which infuriates some Rangers. I like the way Brock Nelson plays the game. And he doesn't have the numbers, the gaudy numbers of Matt Barzal, but He's a good hard-nosed player. Stepped up in the playoffs last year. Him and Josh Bailey, they're two of the big leaders of the New York Islanders. And his line was pretty good in the two games. Beauvillier too, as well. He seems to always show off the identity line that they have with Casey Cizikas, Matt Martin, Cal Clutterbuck, something the Rangers don't have. Yeah, I would give anything to have just half of that. The Rangers did have Brendan Lemieux. It became a numbers game, and they just thought to trade him. And Brendan Lemieux is with the Kings. So was Elias Anderson. It's funny. But they do need a little more grit. They need more grit. They need more grind. They can't – how many times do you have to hear David Quinn repeat over and over how they make too many of those high-risk plays, those passes in the neutral zone, the giveaways, not good in their own end zone, not able to clear pucks out. You know, it has to sink in. You can't lose 6 out of 8 games to your arch rival. You can't. And I understand the Rangers are still a very young team, but it's not like there aren't experienced guys. They gave all that money to Panarin. Panarin's been well worth it. But where was he? Where was he in these games? The same place where Mika Zibanejad was, the same place where Pavel Buchnevich was. Pavel Buchnevich to do a contract, and he deserves a contract. Be interesting to see what they do. Things are restricted. They keep him. I'm kind of hoping for what does he make now, Buchnevich? What's Buchnevich's contract right now? 0.1. I'm hoping for maybe he takes 4.8. If he took that, then they could get. Obviously, and he's also younger than Mika Zibanejad. By the way, Zibanejad will be unrestricted in 2022. Do you want to lock in Zibanejad for a 7-year contract to age like 35? Still got one more year left. That is 5.275 or whatever the hell it is, 5.3. You want to pay him $8.75 million or $9 million into his mid-30s? I'm not so sure. What about Strome? The Rangers, you know, on faceoffs and just problems that they have, problematic. Very problematic. We can talk a lot about some of these kids, and these kids are exciting. They're very exciting. They are. They are very exciting to watch. When I see Lafreniere is going to be their best player in 2 years. I truly believe that. I like what I see from him. I like what I see. Hedel. The jury's out on Philip Hedel. I don't see Philip Hedel as a center. He doesn't win faceoffs. He's very weak against the boards, areas that he can improve. He shows flashes of the skill. We've seen highlight reel goals that he scored over the past 3 years. And he also missed the net a lot. The Rangers must lead the league in missing the net, to quote my friend Sean M. A very funny guy that has his own blog. I have my own blog, newyorkpuck.com, where you can follow the Battle of Hudson, Rangers, and Devils covers. I just wonder, what's the plan? They can't just roll back. They can't bring back the same roster. They can't do it. They can't do it. I don't know what the hell the plan is for next year. I know they're saying October 12th. They want to play a full season, so it'll be a shorter off season because the off season's not going to start until after July. You're going to have the expansion draft. You're going to have the NHL draft. Have all this different stuff. I'll tell you something else. The Rangers and the lottery, the fact that they're going to be in the lottery. You know what? What the hell good is the lottery for this team now? They've got plenty of guys in their system. You know, if you could take a Filipino, you could take somebody else, whether it's a defenseman. I'm not ready to give up Keandre Miller like my dad. Whether it's a Matthew Robinson, you could take, or maybe even – I think they'll probably sign Niels Lundqvist. You know, they want him to be part of it. But you could take one of these defensemen. You could take, you know, that first round – take the first round pick and trade it and get yourself a center. Get yourself a guy that's going to grind. You know, when I said that I liked Mark Stone, I wasn't wrong about that. Everybody loved Panarin. I mean, hell, but Panarin was a center. Panarin's not a guy that's going to – but Panarin doesn't have to – like, he's not – he can avoid sets. That's true. And he's just a tremendous player. Last year, he dominated the Islanders. This year, it's been a different story. And I've stuck too long on this topic, so I'm going to go off of it now. You know the Islanders are going to be in the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, I think the Penguins can handle them. I think the Caps can handle them. I don't think they've got enough offense. I think they'll miss Andersley, and I think they do. I think the Kyle Palmieri pickup, it's a good pickup, but he hasn't really produced all that much. I think Oliver Wallstrom's still one of their best scoring threats, and he scored. Brats reinserts him for Zajac, and he scores against the Rangers. You go figure. I'm just going to do – I'm going to delve really quick into the other couple topics, get out. The Knicks, tremendous. I mean, there is – what else can you say about the New York Knickerbockers? They really are – a fantastic story between R.J. Barrett's maturity in his second year, the poise to the defense that Tibbs preaches, Tom Thibodeau, of course, I'm talking about, who should be the NBA Coach of the Year. You know, without question, he should be. How about the contributions? You know, Mitch Robinson goes down again. He can't stay on the floor, and that's a concern because he's really good. In terms of the defense, in terms of the block shots, in terms of getting offensive rebounds. But how about the contributions of guys like Taj Gibson? Taj Gibson has played that role, and he gets the rebounds. He keeps plays alive, does all the hustle things. I'll tell you what the Knicks do. They outwork teams. And 36-28. And I look at that record, and I just can't believe what I have them at. Maybe 25 wins, 26. I didn't know Julius Randle was going to take this kind of move. I mean, Tibbs is a genius. Randle has always had the talent. Had a big year with the Pelicans after leaving the Lakers. He can post you. He can shoot. He can spot up and shoot the three, face you. He can rebound the basketball. Now he distributes the basketball, and he's more efficient. He shoots over 40% from three. 31 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists against the Rockets. Reggie Bullock with 3 trays. Reggie Bullock's been a good player for this team. Real good at those corner trays as well. Alec Burks still in protocol. Alec Burks has been another real good addition for the Knicks. Has played very well. Yeah, I have noticed finally Obi Toppin. I watched him in a recent game, and the athleticism there, it's starting to come. Don't forget about the injury that he had. It was a calf. That takes time to recover from. He did have 5 points off the bench. But, yeah, you notice him quickly. I like that move when it was made. Sometimes he does turn over the ball a little bit too much for my liking. He's a little bit lackadaisical sometimes where he handles the ball, but he is really good from 3-13 off the bench tonight. 3 trays, 5 of 9. I talked about Todd's 6 points and 5 rebounds. Derrick Rose, the Rose. Everybody, so many people were against this trade, maybe because they just had these flashbacks of what happened the last time they had Rose, like my buddy Brian. I was all for it because I knew this was a different Rose. He played the same role for the Pistons. The Pistons they wanted to play Killian and was getting healthy. They wanted to play some of their younger guys. I just thought he's going to be a perfect addition because he'll come off the bench, he'll work with Quickly, he'll be on that second unit, he calls games. He still has that explosiveness. He is much better in terms of efficiency from three. Tonight, 4 of 5 from downtown, 8 of 11, 24 points off the bench with 4 assists and 6 rebounds and a steal. He plays better defensively, too. He just buys in. He's plus him. He was a plus 35. Taj Gibson was a plus 36. Look, granted, they played the Rockets, and the Rockets are a mess. Barrett had 21.7 boards and five assists. I'll tell you, I mean, Julius Randle, he's not going to win MVP. He probably won't even finish in the top five. I've talked about it with Madison. But he should get some votes. He should finish in the top eight or nine. Why not? I'll tell you, Julius Randle's just been awesome. He's the most improved player of the NBA, and what a job by Tibbs. What a job. Kevin Porter, by the way, was the guard that I was talking about that the Rockets stole from the Cavs. Looks like they got something there. I was watching the highlights of his big 50-point explosion. He's got that awkward lefty, handle. Can kind of – he's 6'4 and a half, and he could step back and shoot the three, or if you overplay – he can get to the basket. So looks like a good dish for the Rockets, who are in full rebuild mode. But the New York Knicks, they're a great story. And who would have thought that the Knicks would be the team and the talk of the town? The Knicks, 36 and 28. Fourth best record in the East. It is a 72-game season. They're not going to be in the play-in round. Thank God. 36 and 28. The Hawks are 35 and 30. The Heat, 35 and 30. Of both teams, it's the Heat that I don't want. I don't want to see. If it is a 4-5 matchup, the Heat are a team that you don't want to see. Because of what they have. And I've seen them take apart the Knicks. They got that inside-out combo with Julius Randle and the big guy, Bam, Adebayo. They're a pretty well-coached team. The Hawks, I would take my chance to get the Hawks. Celtics, they really go as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown go, along with Kemba. I would take my chances with that. The Hornets, they've dropped 2 games under 500. They're without LaMelo Ball right now. He's supposed to be back. They're probably going to be in the play-in with the Pacers. And it's looking like the Wizards because the Bulls just aren't that good. And the Pacers are some of the biggest underachievers in the NBA. I'm real excited. And I haven't said it at least on a podcast, but I'll say it now. By the way, the Sixers are back in front of the Nets because they lost to the Bucks, and the Sixers, I guess, won, so they're half a game up. They're probably going to wind up first because if the Nets is all about getting Harden healthy and getting Durant healthy. No, by the way, are 40 and 24, so they're not even that far back from in second. I'll tell you what, I want the Nets to finish first, I want the Knicks to finish fourth, and I want the Knicks to win their first round, and I want a piece of the Nets. Not because I think the Knicks could beat them. I don't. I'm not crazy enough to think that. The Nets bench is actually pretty good. Joe Harris is still pretty good. Richie Brown is pretty good. They've found some players that are good. Off the bench, as JPG is messaging me. I just want the matchup. I would love to see a Knicks-Nets matchup in the second round. I think that would be pretty exciting. Be great for the city. I think the Knicks, if they were able to get through the first round, and the first round will be, that'll be tough. Whoever they face, it's probably going to be 6-7 games. So it's not going to be easy. They're not a lock to win the first round. Okay, there's no such thing as lock. But if they did, I think they could probably get one game off the Nets. I think they could probably get a game. Let's just get to the playoffs first. The Knicks now have played 54 games, so they've got eight left. Knicks, they're on this six-game road trip, but it's going to get a lot tougher. You know, now they're going to play the Grizzlies, a similar team with Ja Morant. And they're still not fully healthy. It's a winnable game. But this is a good road trip. It's a good test for the Knicks. And they're gonna be facing some teams on the road here. The recovery the Knicks made after they had that terrible loss to the Bulls, and they had some tough losses, 2-point loss to the Nets or whatever, 3-point loss. But they have some tough games coming up on this schedule. They got the Memphis Grizzlies. Then you got the Nuggets, May 5th on Cinco de Mayo. The Nuggets have played very well, and Nikola Jokic is probably the front runner for MVP right now. Terrific player. Even without Jamal Murray, they're still winning a lot of their games. Then you got the Suns, who just beat the Knicks last week in a really good, exciting game. And it was Chris Paul. Chris Paul made the play. CP3 still delivering. So that's a rematch there. Bridges, by the way, had a real good game. A real big fourth quarter for the Suns. The Suns are a real good team. I don't know how far they can go. I'll tell you what, though. When you do watch them, you can see why it's working. They can really space you out. And they have some really good shooters. And Chris Paul does a great job running the show. I just don't know if they have enough size. So you got now every game is spaced out. You got the one back-to-back, Memphis at Memphis tomorrow night, or later tonight, I should say, on MSG at 9. Then you got the Nuggets Wednesday. At the Suns on Friday from over a week ago. May 9th, Sunday. Prime time. Yeah, this is an ESPN game. ESPN. At the Clippers. The Clippers are a funny team. Because Kawhi Leonard can't play every game. Paul George is Paul George. They have the players. They have some real good players. That's where they got Serge Ibaka back. They traded for Rondo. I like that move because Rondo's got championship experience. He won both the Celtics and Lakers. They got Lou Williams. They also have that former Lakers center on their roster. They're good. So this is a tough road trip, and the final game will be at the Lakers on May 11th on a Tuesday. Is LeBron back for the Lakers, or is there no timetable? Anthony Davis obviously is playing. The Lakers are not winning many games lately. And then the Knicks finish with three games all at home at MSG, and they play very well there against the Spurs. They'll probably be in the play-in out west. They still work very hard at the Pop. Then you got the Charlotte Hornets. That should be a pretty specific game for the Hornets, I think. And then the Celtics. So that's what the Knicks are finishing with. At the very least, I think you're looking at least 41 wins for the New York Knicks. Well, I don't really like to do project a lot of stuff. Let's just take it a game at a time and enjoy it for what it is. It's fun. It's fun, again, to be a Knicks fan. It's fun to have a basketball team back, to have the Knicks back. It's been a long time. And thank God they hired Tibbs. It's just amazing the transformation they've had. And hope we see Alec Brooks pretty soon as well, and hope they stay healthy. Now we've got baseball. This will be a brief. The first month has come and gone. I talked a little bit about the Yankees, and that's already. The Yankees got off to a miserable start. What were they, like 5-11 or 6-11 or whatever? like their worst record since like probably 1990 when they managed by Stump Merrill. But their division's not that good. It's really not. And eventually, you know, they were going to start hitting. They're going to start hitting. You know, the idea that they're not going to hit is a little bit nuts. There were concerns, though, the approach to the plate. The thing is, you don't have to always hit home runs to win games. You don't. They won a 2-0 game yesterday. There were no home runs hit. This is Corey Kluber pitching a really good game. Looking started finally looking to round it to form. Granted, he faced a Tiger lineup where I can't even name maybe more than three players. And that includes Wilson Ramos and Miguel Cabrera, who's basically finished. It's pretty sad. And Jonathan Scope or Shoop or whatever you want to call him. They only got three hits. But Kyle Higashioka, call him Higgy, got a big RBI double. And Brett Gardner had a sac fly. And those were the only two runs in the second inning. And Cooper went eight innings. Eight innings. Imagine that. A Yankee pitcher goes eight with a walk, two hits, and 10 strikeouts on 103 pitch, 74 for strikes. That's Cooper's second good outing in a row. And he pitched into the seventh last time, so even up his record at 2-2. And Chapman's pitched great so far, 6-6 so far, striking out everybody. Higashioka has taken over the starting catching role because Gary Sanchez, after he got off to that good start in his first two games, just can't hit. And he's in denial about it. Higashioka is a little bit better defensively, and he's also hit four home runs. And Gio has done the job at third base. He played a little shortstop today. They gave Gleyber Torres a day off. Gleyber finally had a three-hit game. Gleyber's had a couple of good games in a row, and then they gave him a day off. You think you would have seen that in the old days? No. But they decided to play Urshela at short, then he moved back to third. Stanton's actually been hitting. I got to give Stanton credit. He's been hitting. He's hit, I think, in nine straight games. Actually, I think Judge now leads them in home runs. Stanton, I think, has six home runs, and I think he leads them in the RBIs. But he's been hitting. Whatever he's done, it's working for him right now. So it's just amazing that he's just a DH, and he makes all that money. Judge, he's had body soreness a couple of times where they had to sit him out for a few games. But after he rested, I mean, he had the big two-home run breakout game. He hit a grand salami where they just destroyed the Tigers. Hit two home runs. They had like five RBIs. It was up to seven home runs. And he's been hitting very well. Hicks is what Hicks is. He's going to hit for power. He'll hit some home runs from both sides. He could draw some walks, but that's it. That's pretty much it. I mean, is that what you want as your everyday center field? I don't know. Mike Ford, for now, is the first baseman until Luke Voit is back. Ford has two home runs, but he's not going to hit for much of an average. Gardner so far hasn't been that good. Quinn Frazier, we know, has struggled, but Quinn Frazier finally hit a couple home runs. And that will just continue to be a platoon situation. One of the guys who actually has been a good addition is Odor. Ruby Odor. He doesn't have much of an average, but he's gotten a lot of big hits for this team so far, with runners on, with two outs, hit for some power. They got him for basically nothing because Texas just decided to waive him, so the Yankees picked him up. And I was like, what kind of role is he going to have? Well, it just allows him to move DJ Leo around. I mean, he could play some third, he could play some first. So pretty well. Can a team like this win, go far? No, I mean, I don't know. It's early, and the Red Sox lead the AL East. They hit pretty well so far. As much as I don't like Alex Cora, I guess he's a good manager because even though they did lose to the Texas Rangers today, but they're 17-12. Martinez is hitting again. Bogarts, we know, is a terrific hitter. Nobody talks about Bogarts and how good his shortstop. Everybody talks about Lindor. Everybody talks about Correa. I talk about Corey Seager. We could talk about all these different shortstops till the cows come home. But you know what? Xander Bogaerts is probably the best hitting shortstop. He's a terrific hitter. The guy they got in the trade, the Mookie Betts trade, the outfielder, he's been pretty good so far. So they have hit pretty well. They actually pitched better than I thought they were going to pitch. I just don't know if it's going to keep up. Of course, I was talking about Verdugo. Verdugo's hitting close to 300 so far. Vasquez is pretty underrated behind the plate, too. Barnes closes the games for them. They swept the Mets in two games. And Barnes throws – he's always throwing gas. He's like one of the holdovers from their last World Championship team. Valdi so far has pitched okay. Ottavino, he was pretty bad yesterday. He gave up a couple of runs. They have a lot of no-names on their team. You know, they have a lot of guys – like, you really think Garrett Richards is going to continue to pitch the way he's pitched? He struck out 10 Mets where the Mets couldn't hit, couldn't touch him. And he pitched another good game yesterday, but it was blown. They're still without Ed. Oh, that's right. They have Eduardo Rodriguez. He is back. And so Eduardo's probably their ace. I'm not sure if they're going to keep it up, though. I don't think they're so great. I think the Blue Jays, you know, I like their offense. Obviously, with Vlad Guerrero looking like he's having that bust-out season, he's looking pretty good. Bo Bichette, of course, a star in the making right there, another shortstop. Grichuk kills the Yankees, but he's a good player. He kills the Yankees. You have him. You got Guerrero, had a 3-home-run game. You got Springer. He just hit 2 home runs, but he was taken out of the game. What, he get hurt already? Josh Palacios is an interesting story. His brother, Palacios, well, I know because I used to score basketball games at Berkeley Carroll School, at the Berkeley Carroll School in Park Slope. He played basketball. But he, of course, was a baseball star. He was drafted by the Indians out of Towson, and he is getting ready to start minor leagues again for the first time in 2 years. So I want to wish him luck. But his older brother is Josh Palacios, and he got recalled. And he's done well so far. He's done okay. He is 7 for 28, 4 RBIs, had a couple of RBIs against the Yankees, a left-handed hitter. Looks like he can pretty much hit it to all fields. Semien was a great addition to the Blue Jays. He's playing mostly second base. Biggio, so far third, not hitting and not great defensively. But this team could hit. Teoscar Hernandez, he's going to be back. Gurriel is another guy. He should hit. Phelps has been a good reliever. He's been a great addition to their bullpen. Rio, who finished second in Cy Young voting last year, he has pitched extremely well again. Robbie Ray has pitched okay, too. Steven Matz has been a little bit of a surprise, although he's come back to earth. And the Rays, I think that the Rays might have the one guy who could compete with Garrett Cole for the Cy Young. I really feel that way about it. I think that they have the one guy, Glasnow. Tyler Glasnow. He is tremendous. He's always striking out double digits. He's a terrific pitcher. He's got 56 Ks so far in 37 plus innings, 1.67 ERA. They made the right choice. If they were going to trade Blake Snell, which they did to the Padres, it looks like they got a solid return. And Blake Snell, I think, just wanted out of there after what happened in the World Series where he gets pulled. The fifth inning, he got pulled in that game, and they wound up losing. Josh Fleming is a guy to watch out for. He's one of the young pitchers. He's already up. Keep an eye on him. Yarbrough does not pitch well when he starts, but he's much better out of the bullpen. Very strange. But they brought back Chris Archer, and that experiment's not working out. Brett Honeywell Jr. is already up with the team. They have Colin McHugh, but that's not working out so far. Michael Wacha's actually given them some innings so far, and it's pitched okay. The one thing about them is, yeah, they have a lot of guys that they can bring out of the bullpen. They do a great job with that. I'm still waiting for Arozarena to start hitting for power. He has not so far. Margot is just one of those boom or bust guys. Yandy Diaz is a platoon guy. Austin Meadows, I don't know why he's not hitting for better average. He's a little bit of a disappointment so far. Zunino is just a guy who can hit the ball out. He's kind of like Sanchez. Brandon Lowe is a guy that should be hitting better than he is. Brosseau is always put together. He always puts together good bats against the Yankees. I don't know what it is. This team is hanging around. They're going to hang around. They're 14-15. This is strange right now. Same thing with the National League East, where you've got the Nationals back at 512-12, the Mets at 11-11, even though Lindor's in an 0-for-17 slump. They finally got some big hits from Conforto. That Jose Alvarado kind of got what was coming to him after mouthing off to Dominic Smith, trying to dare him to fight him after he struck him out with the bases loaded. That, I don't know what that was about. That was just really stupid and it was embarrassing for sport. And he suspended 3 games, but he appealed it, and he comes in promptly, gives up a couple of hits, bases loaded, walk, go-ahead run to Conforto. And a bases-clearing double by Pete Alonso turned out to be huge because the Phillies, for some reason, Rojas decided to go to Diaz in a non-save situation. And for some reason, closers just aren't good in non-save situations. I understand they had him warming. I probably would have not pitched him there. And so what happens? He kind of lost the plate a little bit, put some runners on. The next thing you know, the Phillies have 2 runners on, and Rhys Hoskins is at the plate, at the dish. Now, I'm thinking it's either going to be a strikeout or a home run. Came that close to hitting an opposite field home run, where it hit basically the railing on top and bounced back into play. And, you know, the way these ballparks are constructed, it's very confusing. I mean, originally, the umpires, they called it a home run. And I was listening to the radio this morning. I had Howie Rose on, and Howie's really good. And him and his partner, they're just so confused. They don't know what the heck's going on. You know, they had no idea if it was a home run or not. But his partner was more and more convinced after looking at the replays, that's not a home run, and he was right. So the Phillies ballpark kind of worked against him there. They also had a call. Phillies also had a call go against him, where Lindor said that the guy was running out of the baseline, and it wound up being a double play because he got the guy first, and the guy did not run out of the baseline. So it should have been a runner on second with 2 out. But so Girardi, of course, was upset about that, and Joe Girardi, of course, will always go to bat for his team. But I thought that was a mistake by Rojas. I don't think he's much of a manager. The Mets have the 500. They have not hit that much, but they did hit the last 2 days. Maybe this Alvarado and his just lunacy woke them up, and they've beaten the Phillies, I think, 5 out of 8 times so far? Or is it 6 out of 9? Yeah, I mean, so the Phillies are what they are. The Nats, they got a complete game from Max Scherzer, who then went to see his wife in labor. She's having a kid. So Max Scherzer, I expected a bounce-back season from, and he's given it to them. Trevor Rogers, who we went up against, is a young pitcher for the Marlins to keep an eye on. The Marlins are 11-16, but this Trevor Rogers has pitched very well so far. Keep an eye on him. They're just not getting enough offense so far. The Marlins aren't. But Mattingly did a good job with that team last year. They do have some good pitching. I did expect the Nationals to be good and to be better this year. And I still think they will. I think they'll be in the mix. The biggest disappointment is the Atlanta Braves. Without Soroka, they have some issues. Max Fried got off to a bad start, and then it turned out he had an injury, so he's out. They blew a game to the Blue Jays. And then they lost again. Ian Anderson lost. And the Blue Jays up to 14-12, while the Braves are now 12-16. So they've been a huge disappointment. I mean, they've gotten a great start out of Acuna. Freeman's starting to really tag the ball. Not much of an average, but he's been hitting. Osuna's not hit at all. Albies has not hit. So Sandoval's actually been a good player for them. Good at, I can't believe he's still in baseball. But he is. And Swanson, they have guys that aren't hitting. Austin Riley's been pretty good so far at the hot corner. But the pitching's a little bit down right now with some of the injuries that they have. I do think eventually they'll come around. They're too good. They're too good a team not to be better than what their record is. So that's the story with baseball. In terms of the NFL draft, and maybe I'll expand on this next time, you've had your quarterbacks. You had your run on quarterbacks, certainly, with the NFL draft. Trevor Lawrence, obviously, going to the Jacksonville Jags, going number one. And, you know, the interesting thing is they really wanted Kadarius Toney. They wanted him with that second first-round pick, and because he didn't fall to 25, Urban Meyer decided, you know what, why don't we reunite Lawrence and Travis Etienne? Etienne is a guy that I liked at Clemson. He's a good running back, one of those versatile running backs that he could run, but he's also really good as a target. He'll be another one of those kind of type of players, guy who could break plays. I thought that was a good move by the Jags. The Jets have gotten good grades around it. Zach Wilson with a lot of players. They got themselves another wide receiver. They drafted an offensive lineman. The Giants have gotten some pretty good grades. So there's that as well. They have gotten some great, good grades. People like what the Giants did in the draft. They like the fact that they wheeled and dealed and traded out. They like Kadarius Toney. Not a big guy. You know, people really like drafting the edge linebacker Azeez Ojulari. It's an interesting name right there. They really like him so far. They traded down to 50 to get him. And they took a cornerback, Aaron Robinson, with their third-round pick, moving up for that one. So those were their top three. They also drafted edge guy at Ellison Smith, running back Gary Brightwell, maybe just to be the backup because obviously they lost a running back, and Rodarius Williams was a cornerback. But they got a B+ from Mel Kiper. That's pretty good. And Dave Gettleman doesn't usually make these kind of trades, but that trade with Chicago, I thought that was a great move. I think, obviously, they really wanted Devontae Smith, but they couldn't get him. The Eagles made a good move. And so they went for Toney. And every RIR said that he really was hoping they could get him. They like Azeez Ojulari to fit in Patrick Graham's 3-4. Aaron Robinson, a starter of Alabama, and then he played for Central Florida, UCF. Ellison Smith was my favorite of the trip. A 6'6" guy who had 14 sacks and 21.5 tackles for loss in 2019. But a little bit of a work in progress. Toney is still learning to play receiver, but his development in 2020 was impressive. He could break tackles. Not a big guy, but they like him. Ojulari taken in round one at Georgia. That's where he played. I mean, it sounds good. Look, I don't want to put too much emphasis on this. Mac Jones went to the Patriots. They had him fall after the Bears. They wanted Josh Fields. Every one of these guys, you don't know. Trey Lance, by the way. I said Trey Lyles. Trey Lyles is an NBA player. Excuse me. That's not that good. Trey Lance is the guy the 49ers went with. Garoppolo did send Trey Lance a tackle. That's good. All right. I like Trey Lance's entry. He sat out this year. He's another one of those versatile quarterback that can run with the ball, can pass ball. He played for North Dakota State. I liked the interview. Sounded very good. Kyle Trask also was drafted. Where did Trask wind up with? The Tampa Bay Bucks behind Brady. That's a good fit. Just a real good fit right there. Kyle Pitts, you know, went number four as a tight end. Very high for a tight end to go number four to the Falcons. I know that Sal Licata, he's a big Falcons fan, did not want to take Kyle Pitts. I think he wanted to draft a quarterback to get the heir apparent for Matt Ryan. I can understand that, but I think Pitts is going to be really good. Ja'Marr Chase was the first receiver taken. He went to the, where'd he go, Bengals. I think that was a really good move, obviously. Ja'Marr Chase is supposed to have the most upside. Jalen Waddle, that's the other big Alabama receiver, went to Dolphins. They liked him over Devontae Smith. Look, these are all supposed to be really good targets, and we'll see how it plays out. The truth on the draft is this. We don't know anything. We're not going to know anything until we see these guys on the field. So when we see these guys on the field, we'll have a better idea of how to be able to gauge it. So it's exciting. I want to congratulate every kid that got drafted. Wish them the best of luck. And that's going to do it for this podcast. It went a lot longer than I thought I would go, but it was fun while it lasted. This is the one and only Derek Flex, D-Flex, signing off. And hope you enjoy this special Flexing In podcast. Good night.